The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto. My guest of honor is running a little bit late, but he should be here momentarily. So this is a weekly radio show that is trying to reach out to Bahamians of both sexes, all ages, across our archipelago of beautiful islands. My guest is coming in now. So we talk about a range of topics. We try to speak about every topic under the sun. We're trying to enhance the quality of life for Bahamians. We're trying to promote longevity. We want to be more proactive than reactionary in terms of medicine. But we have a very unhealthy nation in many ways, and that is very saddening and can be sombering at times. We have one of the highest rates per capita murder every single year for decades. We have one of the highest rates of obesity, not just in the Caribbean, but in the world. We have an unacceptable high rate of diabetes and pre-diabetes. As many as 1 in 6 to 1 in 7 adults is diabetic in this country. Children are overwhelmed with obesity as well. So this future does not always look so bright, but we have a lot to be thankful for. We just came out of elections that were peaceful. We need to be thankful that we have a democratic society where elections went by without any incident whatsoever. We have one of the most beautiful countries in the world in terms of climate, in terms of pristine waters. We have educational opportunities that very few countries can attest to, where anyone can receive a quality education, and the sky is the limit. So it is with my great pleasure that I'm going to introduce Mr. Jeffrey Lloyd, who's well known to many in our community as a community advocate. He's a long-term lawyer, educator, previously in politics. He hasn't been in politics for many years, so that's definitely not part of our conversation today. He's also a man of God, deeply entrenched in the Catholic Church for many years. He was a former teacher of St. Augustine's School as well. I believe he was also a deacon. But he's here to speak about an amazing accomplishment. He's a well-known author, and he's written yet another book, Untie, Knot, and Live the Life. Mr. Jeffrey Lloyd, it's a pleasure as always. I'll always use the words an author and a scholar, and it's a pleasure for you to be here.
Thank you so much, Doctor. It's a pleasure to be here always with you, and I'm very grateful. Congratulations.
So talk to me a little bit about this book. What inspired it? What is the book about? And what can readers get from this book?
This book comes about because I was never trained as a counselor. But from the very young age, my friends and contemporaries used to come to me and share with me their problems. And they saw something in me which motivated them to believe that I may have been able to assist them and to, you know, unload, as it were, those matters and issues in their lives which burdened them. I found that I had a gift of listening, and I believe this is what was quite attractive to them. I didn't have any ambitions of judgment or trying to help them by giving them answers myself. I just simply listened, and because I was always a curious child and person, I asked many, 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 many questions when they came to me. And I think what it assisted them to see was what they were really dealing with at a deeper and much deeper level. And so I continued this throughout my life, quite honestly. It's been now maybe 60 years that I have been, as it were, in the counseling business. At one time, Doctor, I had quite a vibrant counseling practice, although I have to admit that I never charged a penny, and sometimes people would be kind to say, you know, here's something. And I specialize, quote unquote, in relationships, mostly between males and females, whether boyfriend, girlfriend, and, you know, married couples. And one thing became very clear to me, that was over these many years that people were carrying some heavy, heavy, heavy emotional burdens. And I mean really heavy. They were gripped with grief of, you know, guilt, resentment, grudges, unworthiness. I mean, they just really were trapped in this mindset that, you know, they were unable to get out of. And when I look back on my own life, I saw some of this in my own existence. And some time ago, I decided that I wanted to write a book about this feature of humankind where we seem to be trapped by mistakes that we may have made or offenses that may have been directed towards us, and how we, in my mind, I think, can get out of it, quite honestly, how we could address it. So I began writing this book about a year ago. My daughter is a publisher, lives in New Orleans, and she assisted me in bringing it to the place where it is today. As you remember, Doctor, I also wrote my memoir, was published and launched last year. And so I've kind of found maybe, I don't know if you call it another career, but I enjoy writing and I enjoy sharing some of what I have learned. And not only through my own life's experience, but what I have observed intimately with the in the lives of many others. And like I say, I've never been trained as a counselor, but I think, you know, I have a natural orientation towards listening and allowing people to uncover, you know, the answers that they seek to their own issues.
Well, You're a man of many talents. That is a certainty. But far too many of us are burdened by the past. We are obsessed with what went wrong and what may go wrong, instead of living for the present, living for the future. A typical middle-aged male or female, maybe 40, 42, they are obsessed with what happened in the previous 42 years instead of living life and looking forward and having a fresh start for the next 45. Yep. They're not living for today. They're not living for tomorrow. They are living for what could have been, what should have been, regretting what they didn't do, what path they took. We can always learn from our mistakes, but we don't live by our mistakes. And I think that's a major problem with many in our society, not just in our society, but worldwide. But we don't except that the past is the past and that we must move forward for our own happiness. We only have a finite number of years on this earth.
That's correct.
If we are going to spend endless years trying to dissect and analyze what we didn't do right instead of just learning from that mistake, and yet when we're obsessed with the past, we let life pass us by.
That's correct.
Yes. So we need to somehow make peace with what we regret. And we shouldn't even hold on to regret. So that should be a fleeting emotion that we just move on. All of it, many persons will often say, many very successful persons say that the most impactful things in their life were their failures.
That's correct.
Not their successes. If you were to look at any individual, even in our society, who've had great success at any point in their life, or even presently, they've had many failures.
Absolutely.
And they've gone through many tribulations. They've garnered strength through great trying times, and no one is handed a trophy right away. You have to fall down, get up, fall down. You need to climb up that mountain slowly but surely. You need to tumble down that mountain again. You need to get up again. Most businessmen who have a successful business have failed in a business 2, 3, 4 times, on the brink of a bankruptcy, almost giving up.
Yep.
And then they kept trotting on, And what they learned from the mistakes made them an even better success later in life.
Absolutely.
How do you think people can just let go of the past?
Well, I've spent all of my life pursuing the, as it were, the spiritual path. And as you mentioned earlier, I eventually ended up becoming the deacon in the Roman Catholic Church for 11 years. When I left the Bahamas in 1969, I left actually with the full intentions of becoming a Catholic priest.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yes. And but, you know, the ordained ministry continued to call, and I continue even to this day to share in the ministry of the church, but in my own specific calling of the Lord's work here on earth. And what I found, what I found is that most of us live life sleepwalking. We don't really know what it is and who we are and why we are here and what we are about and what God has called us to be and what our assignment is. That's my next book, by the way. That is already finished. It's just about publications now. And Dr. Joe Dispenza, taking a page out of Carl Jung's philosophy, said that the first step for us is to make the unconscious conscious. In other words, pay attention to what you're thinking. Pay attention to what you're speaking. Pay attention to your thoughts. And pay attention to how you're feeling. Now, this requires us to take time to be with ourselves. You know, we are, of course, captured by the memories of the past, which you have already spoken to quite eloquently this evening, rather than a vision of the future. And because of this, you know, we are continuously driving through life, looking, staring in the rearview mirror. I spend a minimum of an hour plus each day before dawn, 4 or so o'clock in the morning, in meditation. It was a practice that developed in my life back in November of 1982, and I have never let go of it because it is so rich and rewarding for me. And it is something I have taught to others over these past 44, 45 years. Because, Doc, you are the only person really that is important in our lives. You know, you cannot give what you don't have. And if you, as Dr. Richard Rohr, Father Richard Rohr says, hurt people, hurt people. We, if don't transmute our pain, then we are going to transmit it. And this is the tragedy that unfortunately has engulf the life of so many persons. So my first invitation to people is to pay attention, to take a look at you, take a look at who you are, all parts of you, those that are something to be proud of and even those that you may not wish for anybody else to know about. And this is what Carl Jung called the shadow. These are the unspoken realities of our existence. Take a look. Take a look at how you think and what you think. Take a look at how you speak and what you speak. Take a look at how you move and how you react in all situations. And this really means and requires us to stop, be still, to observe, to focus, and to develop the expansive awareness of who we really and truly are. And when we do, we are going to find some very amazing things about us, Doctor. First of all, we are going to recognize that we are beautiful beyond measure. We are incredibly talented. But we also have some stuff that we have to work on. We have our faults. We have our blind spots. We have our prejudices. You know, we have our judgments. We have our agendas. And these are not bad in and of themselves unless we refuse to take a look and to, as it were, acknowledge them. And when we do, half of the battle has been won. So my first invitation is take a look. Pay attention. Know who you are and what you're about. And give others the space to be and to do the same.
Last week, I had a very frank and intimate discussion with Dr. Tenille Cargill, who was very vocal on a national level in terms of his battle with life-threatening extensive lung cancer. And we spoke very openly, and one thing that it struck me that we both discussed that he thought he had many, many problems. Throughout the day, throughout the weeks, throughout his life, he thought about the dozens and dozens of problems that he had, like any of us have. As soon as he heard that diagnosis of lung cancer, he had one problem. All of the other problems became inconsequential and really looked very, very small in comparison to facing life or death. And in that moment, he developed a clarity of thought, a clarity of purpose that a lot of persons don't have, because he got rid of all the small things that were inhibiting him from actually enjoying and embracing and making most out of life. And unfortunately, we have a society that essentially there is an abundance of post-traumatic stress disorder, where even we'll take it from relationships, for example, how many women, because of the turmoil and the bad experiences of their mother or their grandmother, that has influenced their relationships and in turn influenced the relationships of their daughters. So when you have a nation of women who believe that Bahamian men are no good, that you shouldn't believe in marriage, that don't trust any men, try to get whatever you can from a man because a man will never give you their heart. Where are we as a nation? And that comes from pain, pain of your mother, pain of your grandmother, pain of seeing your parents get divorced or your grandparents getting divorced. But we need to have a fresh slate. We need to let, if we had bad experiences in our life, if you as a mother had a raw deal and you had two men in your life and they left you with five children and none of them are supporting you in any way and you're working two jobs, working yourself to the bone just to try to make it, you don't try to transmit that negativity that you have encompassing your life to your daughter. Let your daughter have a fresh slate. Let her have make her aware that, you know what, there are men who can be devious. You need to look at what are the qualities you want to look for in a future relationship. Learn from my mistakes as a mother. Learn from my mistakes as a grandmother. But don't have that negativity that, you know what, I'll never have a successful relationship. Because what we have in our society is a nuclear family that has become almost a disappearing act. And what is the consequence of that? We have a failing society because of it, because the family, the nuclear family, is the bedrock and foundation of our society and our future, and we are losing that. And a lot of that is because of anger from generations past.
And anger, actually, Doctor, is a cover for a deep and organic sadness. And I mean, you touched it right on the nail, and that is pain. In our hearts, so many of us are carrying a wound, and I mean a serious wound, an emotional wound, a psychic wound that colors the entirety of our existence. It's an existential wound. And like you indicated, it is usually transmitted from those who are closest to us. And I'm sad to say, because I touch on this in my book, even from those in whom we have reposed a certain trust, including the church. Yes, I have to say it. I'm a church man, but I also have to say it. And I believe that, and as I indicated earlier, if we don't transmute, and that can only happen, that transmutation can only happen by paying attention, by doing the work. It's not an easy confrontation that we must have with ourselves. We have to acknowledge that we have been wounded. We have to accept that we have been betrayed. And yes, that the insult did in fact land and we were abandoned or we were rejected. We were humiliated or disappointed, even about with ourselves. Let us accept that we are human and we will have these experiences, no question. But my central teaching, Doctor, because I have had that experience myself beginning on November the 7th, 1982, in my home in 1948 Law Street in New Orleans, that we are a fragment of the divine having a human experience. Yes, the human wounds are real. We're not here to minimize or to obfuscate, or to any way seek to ignore, brush over. Absolutely. But at the core of our essence, at the foundation of our being, we are divine, and our wounds are not our final identity. And because we have allowed the wounds to fester, they have become knots. That's why I titled my book, Untie the Knot. And that knot, is, again, the lens through which we negotiate life. And it persuades us to forget who we truly are. So the foundational, as it were, methodology or therapy or prescription in this is to take a look. Acknowledge that I'm hurting, that I have been, let down, I've been disappointed, I have been made ashamed, whatever it is. Yes, let's accept that, okay? And that's the first step along this way. And then come to the deeper realization in spending time with yourself, like you indicated, Doctor, so wonderfully and beautifully. Come to the deeper realization that, maybe mommy didn't, or father, or brothers, or family members didn't love, but there is a core essence of love within me. We were made of love, and we were made for love. And that's not something you will come to immediately. I get that. I struggled with it for many decades, trust me. I was very angry with my mother. Very angry with my father. I didn't think he liked me, in fact, Doc, quite honestly. I knew that he favored my second brother, the one closer to me. He used to whip me all the time just for being, in my estimation, a boy. I talk about this in the book. But I realized one day after college, I went to visit him, and I told him I didn't like how he used to beat me, and he tried to dismiss it. And I can tell you, if he wasn't my daddy, I would punch him out for trying to, to more or less dismiss what I had experienced, which was real, which was genuine. But he said something that caught my attention, and this is where my road to forgiveness began. I did the best that I could at the time. And here was a man who himself was wounded, because he had been himself. His father had left his mother. They had a very acrimonious relationship throughout their lives, as well as the breakup. And so he was transmitting his pain to me. And in that moment, I saw my father for the first time in a way that I had never seen him. I was about 25, 26 years of age. And that began a reconciliation, a love, and a respect and admiration for him that continued until he died some years later. My mother, the same thing. I was 2 months old when my grandmother came from Long Island and took me back to Long Island to be raised to help out my mother because, she was a young Long Island girl here in Nassau, nobody to care for this newborn baby. She was a stranger in a strange town and all that stuff. And when I became aware of this, I accused her of giving me away. Okay? First of all, this was a cultural thing back in the day when grandmothers, you know, living on the family islands would take their children and raise them. And it was Monsignor Preston Moss who helped me to understand that you were favored. You were taken out of a situation in New Providence, taken back into a loving, caring environment back in Long Island. And I could tell you, my grandmother, her singular focus for as long as I could remember, and I stayed with her until I was 18, was my care and well-being. There was nothing else in her life but her Jeffrey. Nothing else. And when I came to realize that, I bent down before my mother and begged her forgiveness for how I reacted to that information. So I struggled too. I struggled with this thing about forgiveness. I carried the knot in my heart too towards my parents. Okay?
Well, your story is very, very common and very persuasive in many ways. I think when you ask why does one parent behave in a certain way to their children and ask why do they not exemplify unconditional love is because they never experience unconditional love. They don't know what unconditional love is. So they may show love in the only way that
they know. Yes.
Unfortunately may be less than ideal, but you need to understand someone from where they've come. I think one of the sectors of our society, obviously, this is not even debatable, that's in the deepest crisis are our young men.
Yes.
Our boys, our preteens, our teenagers, the 20-year-olds, their lives are filled with chaos, emotional trauma, turmoil. And for a lot of them, it starts from their grandmothers.
Yes.
Their fathers, their mothers, their aunts, that from 18 months, 2 years old, anything that happened in their life, they got a beating. So if anybody ever did anything wrong to them, maybe then when they're 16 years old, another 16-year-old, a 17-year-old committed a transgression against them, all they have been taught from the time they were a baby, a toddler, throughout their younger years, is that if somebody does something wrong to you, your reaction needs to be met with violence. Yep. And that's exactly what they do. That's all they've ever were taught.
Yep.
They were never taught to speak about problems or try to console somebody. All they're going to do is react. It's almost as if they're a soda can that's been shaken and shaken, and one day just open the lid and it just sprays all over.
And
so many of our young men are just volcanoes waiting to erupt, and we don't address that. We are taught, as men in our society, don't show your emotions.
Of course.
Bottle it up. Real men don't cry. Real men don't admit that they have any pain. If you're a teenager and your first love and someone breaks your heart, you just never give your heart to anyone. Don't have a heart. That's the answer.
Yes.
Don't have a heart. Oh, next God. Time, never give a heart because you don't have a heart. It doesn't exist anymore.
Yep.
So we are a nation in trouble. We don't have enough space, safe spaces in our society. And what I mean by safe spaces is a place or an environment in which a person or a category of people can feel confident that they will not be expected to have any emotional or physical harm. They can just feel free to convey any emotion and to be themselves without any repercussions whatsoever. We don't have enough emotional fluency in our society for young persons, particularly young men. And by emotional fluency, I mean being able to sense or translate and effectively apply the power of your emotions in a healthy and productive manner. So there's no emotional outlet for the vast majority of young Bahamian men. And that's why we have Fox Hill overrun with young men. That's why we have so much in the way of emotional and physical abuse in relationships. That's why we have so much violence in the school. we need to do better, Bahamas, and we need to come to a solution, but we need to have an outlet where young men can get counseling, where they can openly speak about their problems in their heart, and we just don't have that.
Well, as you remember, Doc, for 13 years, I led a transformational program in the Bahamas called YEAST, the Youth Empowerment and Skills Training Institute. Yes. We began on DeVoe Street. We moved then to James Cisteny Lutheran, and eventually we concluded 2005 to 2009 in North Andros, in Bach, North Andros. And the center course, the main course in our 24-hour, 7-day-a-week school away from home, boarding school for young men who found themselves in disaffected circumstances in life. They came out of the boys' industrial school. They were kicked out of the government school. They came out of prison. We took them to Andros. The very first course that stayed with them for the 9-10 months that they were with us was called self-awareness. And we gave them what you're describing right now, the space to be in touch with who they are, the space to in touch with their feelings, to take a good, solid, unvarnished look at their lives. And what we try to help them to understand is, yes, you hurt because you are human. And yes, the betrayal of your loved ones mattered. The rejection mattered. And the abandonment, whether humiliation or disappointment, whatever it was, it mattered. And we are not asking you to deny that. We are, in fact, asking you to acknowledge it and to recognize and accept it. But your humanity is not the whole of you. Beneath that wounded personality, that wounded spirit, is a deeper self we always taught them. And that is the image and likeness of God, the breath of divine life, the fragment of eternal consciousness that cannot be reduced to what happened to you. And I could tell you, as we taught them how to drive, we gave them courses in scuba diving, they learned leadership lessons, they learned how to cook, how to take care of themselves, and on and on and on, you saw a transformed human being right before our very eyes. In fact, it got so interesting and so beneficially powerful that when parents came to see their sons at graduation, they had not seen them for 10 months. Remember this. Many of the women, mothers and fathers, cried like babies at how changed, how different their sons were. They could not, even to this day, and that program has ended now since 2009, even to this day, 27 years later, I know of parents who still say, "Boy, Mr. Lloyd, I could never stop forgetting you and thanking you for what you have done for my son." So you're right on, Doctor.
I mean, for male infants, tears or crying is a form of expressing a need for help or expressing unhappiness or wants. But for too many Bahamian teenagers and young men, cries for help are rarely tears, but they take the form of abrasive behaviors, acts of violence, criminal acts, delinquency, drug abuse, or even the worst case is suicide or murder itself. So
yes, yes.
We need positive outlets for young men who are hurting, and their young women are hurting as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's not brush that aside as well. There are a lot of, across the board, both sexes, there are a lot of persons who not only are hurting as young persons, but carry that hurt all the way into their late stages of their life and even till their deathbed. Mm-hmm. And they've spent a whole life full of anger, regret, remorse. And if they really look back at their life on their deathbed, they would say they really had no life at all.
Yep.
And we only have one life that God gave us. Mm-hmm. Why do we spend so much of it angry, full of anger, full of regret, full of remorse, instead of enjoying the positive in our life? And there's so much positive in our society.
And you see, I say, Doc, the reason I point to the church, unfortunately, is we were shown and taught And I came up in this for a time in the Jumper Church, and I have to say it this way. We saw a God, we were taught and shown a God who was a God of judgment. And we were essentially taught how to fear God, okay? Because we were more or less kind of constricted to quote-unquote, you know, righteous or proper behavior. Well,
and then we were also taught to suffer in life and our reward will be in heaven.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to love someone that you fear, okay? It just does not compute. And so we were taught how to be judgmental, okay? We were taught how to be separatists and to fear those who were not like us. In fact, to condemn those who we perceive not to be like us, you know? So the church in itself has done a great damage to our people in the society. It just has. And this is why, if you pay attention to the statistics, and certainly I can speak for the Catholic Church, I mean, you could look at the pews on Sunday morning, and I have observed this over the past 40 years. You know, Easter, when churches were packed to overflowing, you needed chairs, the outside, and tents, and on and on and on. You're finding difficulty now in filling these pews. And that's because people don't feel that the church is meeting them where they are and leading them to a transcendent future. And in my programs, when I was in the Catholic Church teaching heritage and I conducted retreats and otherwise, I tried to help our people to come in touch with themselves and to appreciate and realize that this is a God of love. It's not a God of judgment. This is a God that wants you to be the best version of yourself at all times, and that his grace is endlessly available to enable you to do and to be that. And God is not up in the sky with a big book in it and, you know, his golden slippers with his white beard and folks fanning him, and he's writing down every infraction and transgression that you commit, you know, so that when you come before the judgment seat, quote unquote, that you are going to be, you know, sentenced, as it were, because of the sins you have committed. That's nonsense. That's not the God that we serve. That's not the God that lives within you. And Jesus spoke about this. So we see it, and it's all around, okay? And like as, you say, Doc.
As an educator, Mr. Lloyd, what is your stance and your opinion on corporal punishment? Do you think it does more harm than good?
Doctor, I said to my daughters, and I have five of them, four of whom have children, if any day my grandchildren, your children, come to me and says, Pops or Grandpa, Mommy whipped me with a belt or with a switch or slapped me or any way, in any shape or form, corporal punishment, I'm calling the police. I have warned my children, do not put their hands in anger on my grandchildren. I've warned them that. They are precious gifts of God. They can understand. You surround them with love. You speak life to them. Yes, there are occasions and needs for discipline in a way that helps them to appreciate that some things are appropriate, some things are not appropriate. But there's never an occasion, and never can it ever be justified, of abuse. And this idea of corporal punishment, like that some people make reference to the Bible, spare the rod and spoil the child. First of all, you are misinterpreting that scripture. We don't have the time now to speak about that. But you are misinterpreting that scripture. And the infliction, I was whipped many, many, many times. And I grew up to be literally angry with my father. All right? And I was angry with anyone who caused me any kind of pain rather than try to reason, talk, and make me understand. I was a very, very smart and intelligent child. You didn't have to hit me. You could point out to me, as my grandmother did. My grandma never hit me, never beat me. My daddy did, my mother did, and other adults in life, Mr. Adley and those at St. Augustine's, used to tear up our behind with those razor straps and so forth. There's never a reason for that. I don't ever remember. Now, of course, there is some need for people to be constrained when they are a damage to themselves or to others. But that should be the last resort. And if we do it properly, and if we approach it with love, that resort will probably never have to be employed. So if I ever become the Minister of Education, or that I'm ever looking to be one, and I don't expect to be one, that is one thing that you can't bring across my desk and expect me to approve. Corporal punishment, not a day like it. Our children, you've mentioned it, Doctor, in the time that they probably are in the womb, much less in their toddler and childhood years, are already being abused by words, by neglect, by just emotional abuse. Plus, you're going to slap and beat them and hit them with anything that comes to your hand? Oh, no. I will never, ever, ever tolerate that. And I could remember on Camp Road, this was about a month and a half ago, I was driving and I saw an older woman beating a little child. And I mean, this would look like about 2 years of age because he was able to walk, beating him with a belt. And Mr. and Doctor, I came out of my car and I said, "Ma'am, in the name of Jesus, tell me, why are you beating this infant with a belt? Oh, he is so rude. He is so bad." I says, "Tell me what he did." "He was back talking the teacher in class." "Well, you know, and I know, Doc, he probably learned that from her or his mother and so on." How could that justify beating this child on the streets with a belt, this infant child? I said, "Ma'am, I must ask you, please don't touch that child with a belt. Because if you do, and I'm going to follow you, I am going to call the police." He said, "But mister, you don't know this little boy. This little boy is so bad." How could a two-year-old be bad? I mean, think about it. I mean, you know, but I understand. Here is another person who is suffering her pain, who has not dealt with that pain, and who, of course, is transmitting it to this child.
Well, certainly violence breeds violence and disrespect breeds disrespect. But if we can reach out to young boys early on and change their internal world to a positive one, then possibly their external world will be shaped by them instead of their external world shaping them. And that's what we see far too often in our society.
That's beautiful, though.
Yeah. So as men in this country, we cannot continue to ignore what is not seen. The internal world of boys and teenagers and young men in our country is made up of our thoughts, our emotions, and our feelings. But what is unseen in the males in a country is often more important than what is actually seen. So our society has trained boys and men not to cry, not to call out for help. Men are therefore grow up and are challenged to just soldier through life, void of concern for their inner well-being.
Yes.
So the unsustainability of Bahamian male trauma, and it's actual Bahamian male trauma, Bahamian male rage, Bahamian male resentment, is a real thing that we need to address if we're going to save our nation and our future.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree. And I endorse it the way you said it again, very, very, very beautifully.
Yeah, so a lot of us will say it's because of our circumstances that we are what we are, or that's the way we act. So our environment does not define us. Just because you were born into difficult circumstances, just because you were born into poverty, just because you live the daily struggle of poverty. So poverty does not define your destiny. Most of, just a generation ago, two generations ago, everybody was poor.
Exactly.
And they've, how many hundreds of persons that we can think through, thousands of Bahamian history, have achieved greatness.
Of course.
And I'm not just talking about economic success. I'm talking about how they've touched others in society, how they've touched the nation, how they've built our society.
And the world.
And the world, yes. And
Dr. Miles Monroe is an example. You know, Bert Williams, back way in the early of the last century. I mean, Sidney Poitier and others who have done a tremendous work in touching the souls and lives of people around the globe with our, highly talented. Look at the United States and the National Basketball Association in professional sports. So we are gifted humans. We are just beautifully blessed. And spending time with yourself and coming in touch with who you are and recognizing that your hurt is not who you are. Your humanity is not the whole of you. You know, beneath that wounded personality
And you mentioned Miles Monroe. I remember when he passed away. I was actually on the other side of the world working in an emergency room in a trauma center. And I remember distinctly there were nurses, there were even male physicians of all colors who were just collectively sobbing and crying inconsolably. And they didn't even want to tell me what was wrong because they knew I was from the Bahamas. And they said that Miles Monroe had died tragically. And all of them, I didn't even know they knew Miles Monroe. Absolutely. And they spoke about how he touched their lives and how he was a great comfort to them and a beacon of hope and how the words transformed their lives and the lives of their family.
Yes.
And it was unbelievable.
Yes.
It was completely unbelievable to me that he was had such a broad, lasting
impact
on throughout the world.
Throughout, yes. Yeah. In 2006 or seven, yeah, six, I was in Argentina and, going out to dinner with our clients at the time and asked, well, you know, where are you from? Some of the visitors, where are you from? And we said the Bahamas. They said, Miles Monroe.
Yes.
Argentina.
Yes.
Okay, Buenos Aires, Argentina, 2006. Miles Monroe, hardly can speak English, but they are able to express their affection for Miles. You know, Doc, we live, with such a deep sense of victimhood, and again, imposed upon us, because, over these decades that we have lived our lives, we have been told how unworthy, how useless, how poor, how broken, how failed we are. But there's another message, and there's a more beautiful and transcendent and divine message that I want to share with you, and that is that you are beautiful, again, beyond measure, even though you are human, and yes, your wounds are real, but you are the divine, in essence. And these wounds are not your final identity.
And
not that was formed when the pain persuades those knots that you allowed to be formed and to be carried throughout your life. That's not who you truly are. Please. And I invite you to touch the essence of your soul and your spirit and come to that place through stillness and through prayer. And wherever you need to, get to a mentor, a wise elder who can assist you in walking this path to enable you to come as I did and as I am blessed to have been. Come and see who you truly and wonderfully are. As the Bible says, wonderfully made, and you are that. And there will be an essence that will perfume your life. And people will say, did you change your hair? Something is different about you. They can't put their finger on it because something is. There's a light that emits from your very being, and that now transcends all of that negativity and that pain and suffering and difficulties you had. In fact, you will look back and give thanks for it because it enabled you to come to the place where you are today, as it did for me in those years when I struggled to get out of under the pain of difficulty, of unworthiness and blame and shame and victimhood. That's not you, and it doesn't have to become you. And you don't have to remain. And it's never too late, Doctor. It's never too late. My life changed in an instant, but it's after many years of begging God to reveal himself. At the age of 31, it's 44, 45 years ago. And here I am today, blessedly assured of a divine essence that, again, perfumes my life, and I'm so happy to share it with any and everyone.
Well, we're here with Mr. Jeffrey Lloyd, and we're talking about his very inspirational book, Untie the Knot, Live the Life That's Been Waiting for You. How can persons get a hold of this very inspirational and hopefully life-changing book?
Amazon, of course. You can go on Amazon and just put it in.
Untie the Knot,
Untie
Jeffrey
the
Lloyd.
Knot. Right now, it's 99 cents by way of Kindle.
Okay.
And the idea is not to make any money. I just want to share an opportunity for you to see the possibility of what forgiveness, true forgiveness. You don't have to carry blame. You don't have to carry shame, humiliation, whether it's been something done to you or something done by you to yourself or to others. You There's a future, and a bright and glorious future on the other side of forgiveness. And I invite you to go and meet it.
Well, I always say, from my deepest thoughts, is that nothing in life is worth anything unless you take risks. Don't be afraid to take chances. Don't be afraid to dream big. There is no dream that is too big. So you wake up every single day thinking about, how can I change my life for the better? How can I improve the life of my family? How can I improve the life of my fellow Bahamians and the Bahamas as a whole? But you need to make that decision that you will not be ordinary, that you will be great, perfect, that you have an everlasting potential within you. And as long as you have a heartbeat, as long as you have life, that you have breath within your lungs, that you have the opportunity to change the world, to change your life for the better. It's, as you said, it's never too late.
Never too late.
So through all the chaos and all the pain, God is building a warrior in you that can overcome the most trying of circumstances. So even born with nothing, even born without parents, even born in the most trying circumstances in the ghetto, let hardship build character, self-determination, and impeccable worth ethic to rise above your difficult circumstances. Anything is possible. Absolutely anything is possible. And we see that in our society with so many individuals who are inspiring. As you say, example number one is Miles Monroe.
Oh.
He's changed the world.
Changed the world.
Absolutely. Even many years after his death, he's continuing to change generation after generation throughout the different continents and countries of the world.
I get him on my my phone every day. Every day I have subscribed to his channel, as it were, and I have a short teaching, about 6-7 minutes every day. And it's as if this man is still alive and bringing forth, you know, teachings that are as relevant today as they were 30 years ago, 25 years ago, when he pronounced those words to his audience. Absolutely. Doc, I am so privileged to have been here this evening. You have given me such inspiration by your own utterances. This is just powerful. And I encourage our people to embrace the gift of forgiveness. You know, Jesus taught about forgiveness and love more than any other subject. Forgiveness is the process of finding and untying that knot so that you can reclaim your freedom. Yes, you are human. Yes, the wound is real. But you are more than that human pain, so that the wound is not your final identity. Even for those who may have offended you that no longer are here, you have a picture of them. Sit in a quiet place, put that picture before you, and talk to them. And ask them for their forgiveness. They are very real, but they are in another dimension. And they can hear you, and they can sense you. And trust me, they are more than excited to forgive you. There's a person whom you have offended or who has offended you, and you want to speak with them. You know, it takes courage. Yes, I accept that. But make it a way to do it, okay? You don't have to carry that grudge. You don't have to carry that resentment. And forgiveness doesn't mean that they come back in your life. Yes, you still have the right to set boundaries. You have a right to protect yourself against those who may seek to harm you, those who still live in their ignorance, of course. It doesn't mean when you forgive that you are in a sense excusing the hurt and the harm that was done. No, forgiveness isn't about them. It's about you. It's about releasing you from the grip of that pain.
And for many parents, they stress academics. Obviously, academics are a key to the future, but no amount of accomplishments will ever heal open emotional wounds or the voids in life of a boy or a young man or even a young girl. So it's important, even when we look at that's an imperative for the future of our young boys and young girls, to stress the importance of not just academics, but we also must address the emotional and psychological well-being.
Yes,
just as important or even more important.
More important.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, more important. We know now the heart is essentially the first brain. You know, some say the second brain. But this is where you are really at your full essence, is in your heart. This is where, as they say, you know, the book of Revelation talked about open your heart so that God can enter. But God is already there. You just need to recognize it, to become aware of it. And when you do, you will see a transformed existence beyond your imagination. And I deeply and most sincerely and reverently encourage you to take that journey from that head, that juridical, citadel that sits on top of our neck, to that place in the middle of your chest where you will find peace beyond all human understanding. That is a guarantee.
Well, education, I would like to stress the importance of education. It is the most powerful weapon that we can use to change our Bahamas and the world as a whole. But there is always a light. And if we only were brave enough to see it, if only we were brave enough to be it, be the light, be a beacon of hope for your little brother, for your little sister, for your cousin,
yes,
for a fellow church member.
Yes.
Let's be a plethora of bright lights in the darkness in our society.
Yes.
Even when everything seems grim and the future seems very bleak, if we have enough bright lights, we can do away with the darkness. Let's have a future full of light. What are some of the most inspirational moments of your life, or some of the most inspirational persons that have come into your life? Obviously, you had to have been inspired by your children and wanting to provide the best for them. But what, other than you spoke about the experiences, even the negative ones with your parents, but who are some of the more inspirational persons who actually changed the trajectory of your life in a positive way?
Well, I start with my grandmother, Lita Lloyd, who was born and raised in Roses, Long Island, and who took me at 2 years of age and raised me to become a young man. My mentor, Monsignor Preston Morse, the experience of St. Augustine's College, the great big red machine. My 5 years there was the most transformative period of my life ever. I cannot ever forget that time. And there have been many, many others. My very close friends, Arthur and Otto Fountain, my brother, Halson Moultrie, and others. Doctor, you yourself have been an inspiration to me. You have been very kind. I am very proud to say that you are my doctor, and you have given me very, very serious and beneficial advice and service in the times and when I have needed. But there's so many. But of course, my parents have also been an inspiration. Like I say, once I came to see who they were and are, I have to give you that the gift of that. I am proud of my siblings and my older sisters. I don't have sisters as biological, but Yvonne and Sheba and Melba, who raised me, okay, because I lived essentially among them. And they took me as their little brother and brought me up along with my grandmother. So I have many, many wonderful times. There are moments of great inspiration on the ordination of the diaconate on June 21st, 2000. I certainly went very happy to have graduated, the first in my family to graduate from high school, first in my family on both sides to graduate from college. You know about becoming a member of parliament, becoming a minister in the cabinet of the Bahamas, and on and on and on. So many wonderful things. I'm so grateful for my beautiful wife, Michelle Donna Marie, who has been an inspiration to me, who is tremendously gifted in so many wonderful ways. And my departed wife, Bernadette, I'm grateful to her for the birth of our children, and on and on. So thank you very much. I also pay much respect to my Sunday school teacher, the Reverend Felix Miller, who has passed, but he was among some of the first to have recognized my vocation in ministry, that one day I would be a great preacher, he used to always say, you know, but I'm a little child. I mean, I couldn't quite understand, you know, what he was talking about, but he never let me forget it. And I'm so grateful for them. Yes.
Well, even from my own personal family history, my maternal grandparents never received any education. My grandfather had to drop out of school and became a water boy on a construction site. He had to teach himself to read, never went past grade one. My maternal grandmother never went past grade five, but they had 12 children. All of them received university education.
Whoa.
My uncle.
Whoa.
My favorite uncle.
12 children.
Yes.
All university.
All university.
Get out of here.
Yes. And my favorite uncle, Dr. Lawrence Davis, who you know very well.
I do know him very well. He's a good friend.
Went on to get a PhD in nuclear physics and even work for NASA for some time. So anything is possible. You can reach the greatest of heights. So in closing, I would say in life, you don't meet people by accident. You are the example, the greatest example of a gentleman that I've ever met in my life, sir. And you are truly an example of who I'd like to be. Every connection has a purpose. Some bring lessons, teaching you something you need to grow. Others are blessings, adding light and joy to your journey. Every encounter, whether brief or lasting, shapes who you are. Always remember that you are a person that you want to meet, is a part of the story that you want to reason. Reason for your story. So you came into my life for a reason, and so many others as well. So we're talking about untie the knot, the life, live the life that's been waiting for you. The wonderful inspirational book by Mr. Jeffrey Lloyd. As you mentioned, it's readily available on Amazon.
Yes.
And it's a wonderful read, and it can change your life just as Miles Monroe's teachings and readings have changed your life. You are on that same level of excellence and inspiration on the spiritual and academic level as well, Mr. Lloyd. And I thank you for providing so much enrichment to our society on so many levels for decades, and you continue to do so.
Thank you, sir. You
are truly an unsung hero for the Bahamas, and I think we need to herald you in all that you've done and continue to do.
Thank you so much, Doctor. I appreciate being here.
So I thank you very much for being here, and you're always welcome to come again. And please, public, buy the book, Untie the Knot, Live the Life That's Been Waiting for You by Mr. Jeffrey Lloyd. Good evening. Have a safe week, Bahamas. This is Urologist Speaks with BAME Urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto. Good night.